Our next presenter is David Gouverneur. Yes, sorry. David Gouverneur is an architect and an urban designer trained at Harvard. He is currently a professor at the University of Pennsylvania, where he teaches in the Master of Urban Design program. He is currently also the director of the Mayor's Institute at the University Metropolitana of Caracas. And he was also the former general director of city planning of Venezuela. David, please join me in welcoming David Gouverneur.
Thank you so much. I've been advised that if I speak too long, Otero is going to tell me what the Spanish king told Chavez, ¿Por qué no te callas? Why don't you just shut up? Thank you so much to the MoMA and to the University of Technology. And as been said so many times, this event has been put together with brains, with hot hands, and with a lot of love, with heart. So bravo again. The same as Marcos, I wonder why I was invited to an event on modern urbanism or architecture in the Caribbean. I'm more an urbanist. I'm interested in cities and how they affect the life of the majority, more than architectural events, but both are tied. Being just a few days in Kingston, I had not been here till my parents used to visit me when I was a kid. I had questions that arose, like, why is the downtown dead? Why is the water, vibrant waterfront that once I knew an area that we can't walk at night? Why does it take an hour to go from here to the hotel on a Friday afternoon? Why the Port Authority wants a new cruise terminal to be built within their limits at a forgotten tip and not here bringing back to life our old downtown? Why are the developers repeating the spoil patterns that destroyed our beloved Puerto Rico? These are questions that I think have to be in the center of the discussion of architecture and urbanism and academia, and I think our Prime Minister of Jamaica pointed it out very well in yesterday's introduction. So, having said this, let's go into modern urbanism in the Caribbean. The first idea, and it's been said many times, and the name of my intervention is Venezuela Modernism Contextualized, is that in Germany, the modern movement was characterized by constantly being divorced from the past, emphasizing functionalism, social values, but definitely culture and context, which are most my dearest criteria, were not considered relevant designs of the movement. However, in Venezuela, ideas borrowed from the modern movement were tinted by local conditions, and I tie them to the hybrid nature of the modernist professionals in charge of introducing these new paradigms, as well as the extremely multicultural society that was emerging. If the Caribbean has been mentioned, is diverse, ethnically diverse, we are Caribbean, but again, due to the oil boom, we had an influx of hundreds of thousands of Italians, of Portuguese, of Spaniards, of Jews, of Arabs, of Colombians, of Asians, of Dominicans, that enriched even more our culture. Of course, the context. There is a difference between the islands in the Caribbean and what I call the Caribbean of sweet water. It's a relation to the ocean, but a large percentage of the country is affected by these huge rivers of the Orinoco and the Maracaibo Lake Basin, which gives a different sweetness to our waters and our view of the Caribbean. On the other hand, this ethnic diversity made that our professionals were hybrid, were interested, were eclectic. They were interested in the agricultural landscape as we would find all over the Caribbean, the sugarcane plantations and the royal palms. They were educated in France, in L'École des Beaux-Arts, but of course, Le Corbusier was a hero. They had references with the great artists of the 20th century, with Braque, for instance. But at the same time, they were interested in the local culture, in music, in gastronomy, in colors. and at the same time, they were living through a period of transformation, of modernization, as Carlos pointed out in his excellent presentation. So the general idea is that a city highly influenced by North American urban standards, being the capital of an oil nation, developed a sense of modernness with a distinct character and set of values, which I will try to point out. Well, again, Carlos showed us, Caracas is one of the few cities that doesn't have walls, like the great walls of San Juan, of La Habana. And why didn't they have walls? Because we had a natural wall, almost 3,000 meters, dividing the ocean from the city. I will try to go to some of the criteria that I think, and Carlos did me a good favor by introducing his project. One of them is a modernistic monumentality related to large-scale public interventions. And as we've seen, these resulted in very powerful public spaces with clear spatial definition. This you could see clearly in the project that Carlos showed us. And this helped to articulate our up-to-them fragmented urban tissue. Notice the importance given to public space, public space. Good cities have public spaces. Good architecture helps to produce good public spaces. On the right-hand side, we see Carlos' project, the Villanueva, the Rodrigal intervention. On the left, some of the many large-scale interventions. Notice the fragmented structure of the vertical high-rise development and these huge linear public spaces that were being introduced mainly by the public sector. If these large interventions did not exist, Caracas today would have been an unlivable city. These great traces of monumental urban spaces gave character and gave unity of what would have been a fragmented and uninteresting city. But, and here is an interesting message, it was not only the public sector, like in this case of Los Próceres Promenade, but it was also the private sector that picked up this idea that public space was relevant. This is Plaza Altamira, began in 1948. The designer was an urbanist and landscape architect from Venezuela, but educated in France by the name of Luis Roche, and the developer brought him in, as many other hacienda owners, to say, position my land, market it, but marketed saying that we're announcing a different way of living urbanity, of announcing urbanity. This huge plaza was carried out by the private sector. I miss saying one in Jamaica, there's no reason for Jamaicans to be living in walled cities like prisoners in compounds. This is a different way of developers, of the private sector, understanding the future. This is Plaza Altamira, 60 years later, which was planned as a residential development, is one of the areas of centrality, of vitality, even if it's one of the symbols of where the opposition gathers or the government gathers, it's one of the great public spaces of the city. Interesting things, not only the definition of open space, in a rather classical way, defined by edges, but as you see, with modernist buildings surrounding it, but almost a position of reverence of the landscape. In the way from the plaza, you have a view of the buildings, but the backdrop of the mountain. I was raised, my parents had an apartment in this building, which faces the plaza, and the original lines of this building, although the project was not developed by him, belonged to Niemeyer. Once again, this idea of reverence and recognition of topography, vegetation, as well as use of references taken from traditional architecture. It has mentioned before in other presentations, the patios, the filtering devices of light, the use of color and corridors, all this as sources for contemporary design. Here we have a rather compelling image of the famous Brazilian architect, Roberto Burle Marx, in the Parque del Este of Caracas, where again, he positions his intervention so in order to have the Avila, the mountain, as a backdrop, and he's literally, in his observation, in his sketches, is making a direct relation between the alignment of royal palms would characterize the Venezuela sugarcane plantations and this representation in this water fountain that serves as a backdrop for a stage. On the left, the typical lattices of any Cruz de Mayo celebration in any Venezuelan town in the month of May, and the lattice interpretation in Universidad Central that I would mention in much detail further on. In the upper left house, left corner, it is my own house restoration in the area of La Pastora. The idea of the small contained patios with vegetation, with hard floors, with mosaics, with colors, and the backdrop, the lattice dividing the patio from the living room. The same concepts were applied in Villanueva and many office buildings that I will show you in Universidad Central. And this image I find particularly interesting because, again, there's certainly a modern aesthetics in the building, but there's a classical interpretation of the confinement of space with this rotunda, but it's as important, the edge of the buildings, as the vegetation that flows. You see also the reinterpretation of patios. So there was a conscious interest of the architects of the period, led by Villanueva, this is also a Villanueva intervention, to make direct references to local conditions and reinterpret them in contemporary ways. Another theme which I think is fascinating is the freedom of composition. I would call it non-mathematical patterns, and there's a certain sense of joy, of irony in this. Many authors tend to analyze, certainly traditional architects, finding rules, metrics, rhythms, music that repeats. In this intervention from the 40s on, there was great liberty in the compositions, great flexibility, open-ended compositions. It's very difficult to find similar lines, similar metrics, similar mathematics. When this fantastic image also loaded of great poetry, also of Burle Marx in the Parque del Este, taking natural features but making a very strong aesthetic statement out of them. Now let's get down into business. Of all these interventions that were carried out in this period that started with the Plan Rotival and went on until the late 60s, probably the most important example that we have is Universidad Central de Venezuela, or UCV, designed between 1951 and 57. As you see, since the year 2000, it's one of the few contemporary ensembles of architecture and urbanism in the UNESCO World Heritage List. The architect is our beloved Carlos Raúl Villanueva, but I must insist that he coordinated a very large multidisciplinary team. He was not a one-man show guy. He was a beloved professor. He would love to work in groups, and as you see, the work that evolved was exactly possible because it was made through intense teamwork. It's interesting, this image of Villanueva. He's rather funny face, with his serious suit, but he's playing carnival. The image on the left of his own house, and you see as part of the very 1950 furniture, you see there's a little Alexander Calder there, there's a Passarelli on the wall, there's artwork, but there's also colonial sculptures, and in the lower shelf of the bracket, there's craft. So again, hybrid elements that somehow come into his architecture. And you would find this type of imagery in almost every house of every intellectual, especially in the areas of design. Again, the Valley of Caracas, and towards the middle, you see the green area and sort of the dark patches, that huge like belly or stomach is the grounds for Universidad Central. As you see, a major intervention within the city, and to the left of it, by now, I think you can identify Carlos's Plan Rotival access. So in a way, it was a continuation of this major intervention. This was the surrounding grounds to give you an idea of what was going on. It was not only the campus under construction, the super system of highways lacing the city. Today, we might say it's a huge mistake to have introduced the highways in the city fabric. But these great boulevards, notice the Rambla under construction, without the edges. So we are creating these tentacles, these alignments, these corridors of public space. And that was the framework for Central University. Probably the most important contribution of Universidad Central, and I think it's something we can learn to do today, is interdisciplinary design and research, bringing together city planning, architecture, landscape architecture, cutting-edge civil engineering and art, and working simultaneously. This is the initial scheme of Universidad Central. The yellow is the external vehicular transportation, and notice the interior It is essentially not of individual volumes. It is a spatial scheme in which the volumes are placed to divine space. And then we will go into detail. It's not only the buildings, but their artifacts, their covered walkways, their ligaments, the covered plazas that help to create this very particular speciality and very Caribbean speciality. I would insist that the spatial definition is arranged by modernist volumes, but the same as we saw in the Silencio project, arranged in a rather conventional way to define traditional space, but adding ligaments, covered walkways, vegetation, and the topography, but also introducing the idea of climate control and certainly addressing pedestrian comfort. This is an aerial view of Universidad Central where we start getting an idea. Notice that none of the buildings is freestanding, is independent. They're all part of an urban plan, of spatial definition. They interlock, they're complex. One space leads into the other. Notice the central core with the big auditorium and the building, which the tall building, which is the library. They're not freestanding. They're on a platform, they're on a mesh. They're tied in a mantle of shade. These very unique moves that are essentially modern in aesthetics, but are very classical and very Caribbean in its urban results. This is one of the first drawings of Villanueva. He called it the central core or the covered plaza. I will go into detail. Again, notice a very clear definition of the rectus or administrative plaza, which then gives way to the covered plaza that we'll show in more detail. Notice the definition of the plaza or area behind the big music hall, which the students call no man's land because it was of everybody, not of a particular faculty or school, and is defined by the rear of the music hall, but also by that very elongated element, which is a covered pedestrian walkway, but also notice the open space with the planting meant to be a dense vegetable plaza. So a very clear definition of speciality at an urban scale, pulling together the architecture. That's gonna be the constant. Again, the edges of the buildings, the students gathering in the main administrative plaza, going on strike or whatever, or protesting. You see in the backdrop, the alignment of one of the covered walkways, and then you see the mound on which the botanical garden of the university is, and then in the background, you see Mount Avila. So very clear definition where topography, vegetation, locale is important in spatial definition. Now we'll take you into the covered plaza. From the hard surface of bright light, we enter the building, we start getting glimpses of this covered shaded area, and whammo. In we go to this kaleidoscope of light, of color, of shade, of wind, a very subtle structural grid holding the covered plaza and creating this penumbra, this oasis, this hard air oasis. The elements that fragment the space, for instance, this very beautiful Vasarely intervention, or this opening within the ceiling that allows light to come in, and bathe and enlighten the very beautiful Leger mural, or where the cover plaza comes to an end and you have this element indicating the edge of the topography as the terrain drops, a Henri Laurent sculpture. Villanueva was able to bring to the country those who were to become the great artists of the 20th century. It is not only the architecture, it is this collection, a fantastic collection of these masters of art that got Universidad Central into the UNESCO list, and so on. Jean Arp, local artist. Notice again the intricate relation between architecture, landscape, engineering, and art. Use of materials, the idea of the reflection of light, manipulation of light. And on, again, we could try to understand how the elements are rather simple. These are the different schools. Every school has these accents, these strange elements. This looks like a turtle almost. Are the small auditoriums or the libraries of the school. And again, they're articulated by the covered walkways. Notice the shade that is casted over the open space. And the landscape component pulling together the speciality and the relations with the larger city, with the larger territory. As you see, very contemporary themes that are applicable today. A variation of this covered walkways. They were experimenting, the civil engineers were experimenting the beauty of architecture and pushing their limits. Again, without this experimentation, Villanueva couldn't have been able to do the project if his collaborators were not reaching this level. This is another particular interesting move in which the library, the first seven floors, as you see, have no windows because it's where the books are kept. Is this articulation between the administrative building and the book stalls of the main library with the main reading rooms, which are these terraces, these porous terraces. And as you see, there's an articulation between both volumes and a small music hall. This articulation, this very subtle link, there's a very important stained glass intervention, also one of the largest pieces of Fernand Léger. And these very beautiful relations of edges, of transitions between the interior and the exterior, but also with a territorial understanding of where the campus is located in relation to the city and to the valley. In, out, the threshold, the porosity. And just breaking down some of the elements, this is a Villanueva sketchbook, understanding lattices. And the manipulation of light and color expressed in many ways. For instance, look at these layers of light and luminosity. This is also a Vasarely aluminum intervention, but again, the piece of art makes sense because there's an opening in the ceiling, and it also makes sense because it's reading against the porous lattice of the rear wall. Or again, on Oswaldo Vigas, a local artist, one of the masters of our kinetic movement, but again, the work of art makes sense in relation to the architectural lattice, overlaid, and so on, and so on. Not to bore you, I would like to take you to one of the, probably la pièce de résistance, the main building within the campus, which is the Aula Magna, the music hall. As you see, it's probably the largest volume on campus. It houses about 3,500 people. The interesting thing is that it's not freestanding. Again, it's connected to the other buildings through the Plaza Cubierta. One of the interesting proposals of the Aula Magna, you have the strong structure over the roof, which allows to erode the definition between ceiling and walls. It's almost this circular, convulsive space. And as you see, as part of the architectural intervention, these clouds, these beautiful discs that sway, that move. This is probably Alexander Calder's largest intervention. And only for this, I think the campus deserves to be in the World Heritage List. It was a beautiful, again, interplay between the engineer, the architect, and the artist. These beautiful color clouds have also acoustic functions. And of course, at the time, there were no computers. So they would bring the orchestra in, they would play, and then the conductor would say, fine, but from row 3 to 15, we can't hear the trombones. So they would move the discs around. He said, fine, but now I can't hear the harp. They would, so then the conductor would say, it's beautiful. And then Calder would say, it's a disaster. So this went on for months, and then finally they got the aesthetics, the music, and the general architectural ambiance ready. Here are the two monsters, beloved Calder. Calder used to call Villanueva the devil. They became very good friends. Something extremely important. Many times, modernist architecture is not loved by the people. It's so cold. It's the concrete, the brutalist. Many times it's saying, we don't like it. There's no detail. In this case, Universidad Central is loved by the university community and by the country at large. It's an icon. Additionally, over time, some informal as well as formal interventions have been made. I will show you a few, which shows that also the architecture is not static. It changes, it evolves. It is a place for activity. Not architecture per se, for the sake of artistic intervention. For instance, the covered walkways, one of them with this beautiful cantilever, became the largest informal library in the city. Any latest computer program and CD can be found here for about a dollar. The places can be used for multiple activities. This is the foyer of the Aula Magna, but it's used for salsa classes, for Tai Chi, for whatever. The other interesting thing is the transformation of landscape. This incredible greenery that grows in the tropics with so much energy and power was all planted, it's man-made. The guacamayas, the birds, the sloths, it's this incredible vegetation and animal life. It's part of human interventions. So that's another component of our change, thinking of the future, of the process of change. And this aerial view of the stadiums and the river, which was unfortunately channelized to create the highway, over time, not only it evolves, not only the vegetation retraces the alignment of the ravines of the river, but notice how between the stadiums, new interventions have been made as a circular plaza and the rectangular building to house parking, which allow to take a lot of the parking of the campus out of the university city. And finally, the impact that the university has having on the greater cities. For instance, this huge hall under construction is part of the university. It's the rental zone, which was designed by Villanueva, but was not completed. And now it's the object of one of the main urban design interventions in the city with three metro lines, whatever. Things that were not planned for. Villanueva did not plan for the students to be using it for lookout points or for rioting. And what I bring in this photograph, which is so incredible, is that in the heart of Universidad Central, that was built under a dictatorship, but with vision, with character, with the best professionals, is where the resistance movement of the students has emerged that might change Venezuela and keep it from going to a new dictatorship in the near future. The legacy goes on. Thousands of architects have graduated on the Universidad Central, having the school as a reference, as their backyard, and that is conveyed, of course, in contemporary architecture in Venezuela of today. Two final thoughts before Jorge asked me to shut up. One, that the principles of urban and architectural movements cannot be dogmatic. I assume that if they're able to adapt to context and culture, they will produce much richer results, as we've seen, and appropriate results as well. Second, that the cities are complex and dynamic forms in every change. They represent cultural manifestations and transformations of territory, and thus interdisciplinary and multi-actor design and implementation processes are required to deal with this complexity. Thank you so much.